The first observance of a day honoring fathers was held, I'm told, back on July the 5th, 1908, at a Methodist church in West Virginia. In 1916, President Woodrow Wilson wanted to establish a federal holiday honoring fathers, but he couldn't get Congress to agree. President Calvin Coolidge recommended in 1924 that a special day be observed throughout the entire nation, but he stopped short of making an official national proclamation establishing Father's Day. In 1966, President Lyndon B. Johnson issued the first presidential proclamation honoring fathers, designating the third Sunday in June as Father's Day. 6 years later, the day was made a permanent national holiday when Richard Nixon signed it into law in 1972. For some reason, I thought that Father's Day went long back before Richard Nixon, but it doesn't as far as being a national holiday or a law. It also seems like it's taken a lot of time and effort to convince people that we needed a special day to honor fathers. I think everybody would be on board for a special day honoring mothers, and Mother's Day, of course, went back many years earlier. But when it came to honoring fathers, there didn't seem to be a whole lot of support to do that. And that could be because fathers oftentimes, especially in our day, do not act very honorably. We all know that there are many fathers who are deadbeat dads, who are not taking care of their responsibilities. They create children, but they don't take care of those children. And so maybe it's the fact that people don't have a whole lot of respect for their fathers that it took so long for the recognition of a national day honoring fathers to become popular. Well, we all could think of many ways to show our appreciation for our dads, especially on Father's Day. There are many people who are honorable in acting as fathers. They are not deadbeat dads. They are doing what they need to do. They provide for their children. They are good examples for their children. And obviously, we ought to honor them on a day like today. No doubt, many of us fathers will receive special cards or gifts today. Hopefully, the dads will have maybe a special lunch meal or maybe a special dessert or something. Maybe you'll have some opportunity later today to do something that you want to do as a family to honor your dad. I hope that you'll do something like that. All these special efforts are designed to honor dads on Father's Day. Making a special meal for your dad or a special dessert is certainly honoring, but it's only temporary. Even if you have a nice lunch and even if you have leftovers, and my wife made me a spectacular blueberry cake that I plan to eat much of today, and it'll be probably available for the next couple of days, but that's kind of a temporary thing, and then we'll have to go on to other desserts and other meals. But, you know, how can we honor our fathers other than just doing a nice meal or a nice dessert or maybe a fun activity? Are there other ways that we can honor our dads really throughout the year and, frankly, throughout our lives? Well, yes, the Bible does give us several things that we can do as a means of honoring fathers. So let's look at a few things that the Bible says about how to honor your dad. First of all, and it's kind of self-explanatory, and that is that we should show honor to your dad, show respect, show some appreciation for what your father does. It says in Ephesians 6, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and your mother." And of course, that goes right back to the Ten Commandments, which also command us to honor our parents, our father and our mother. So we have that both in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. It's a very common, very well understood command that we are to honor our father and mother. And notice that this does not say if your father is of a certain quality, if your father is saved, if your father is doing the right thing, if your father is perfect, then show honor to him. Well, there are no perfect fathers, and it doesn't say that you honor your father only when he's doing the right thing or is the right kind of a father. Now, we know that some fathers are, frankly, dishonorable, but still, we can try to react to them, try to deal with them in an honorable way. Even if your father is not very honorable, you can still be honorable toward him or treat him or try to treat him in an honorable way. There is no such thing as a perfect father. Sin has penetrated to all fathers. Everybody has problems. Everybody falls short of the glory of God. And so we need not think that the father, we should not expect the father, any father to be perfect. And so we can appreciate our fathers and honor them in spite of their failures. This command also has an attached promise. that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. So if you, as a child, or, you know, living under your father's roof, or even if you're grown up and moved away, if you want a happy life, if you want a long life, if you want God to honor you, then the Bible tells us to honor our fathers. Now, sometimes our fathers do things that we don't appreciate, and oftentimes we have to forgive our fathers. And that is a way of honoring them as well. That's a way of following the Lord's commands to forgive those who do evil against us. And so whatever it requires, we ought to try to treat our fathers in a way that would be honoring to God, especially on Father's Day. Secondly, do what your father tells you to do. In other words, obey your dad. The father is the head of the house, Ephesians 5:23, and children must submit to their fathers, really to both parents, but especially their father, as their primary authority. In fact, really, there is no greater authority other than God than your father in the household. God is the one who put your father over you, and so you need to be recognizing his authority. And the Bible contains many verses instructing children to obey their fathers. For example, Proverbs 1:8, my son, hear the instruction of your father. Proverbs 6:20, my son, keep your father's command. Proverbs 13:1, a wise son heeds his father's instruction. And then, of course, the one that everybody knows, Ephesians 6:1, children, obey your parents in the Lord. The word obey here suggests listening attentively, heeding, hearkening, conforming to what your father tells you. Many of us, I think, are guilty of selective hearing. Do you know what I mean by that? If you're involved in something else, maybe you're watching the TV or you're doing a job or something, and your parents come and talk to you, you act as if you don't hear them. This is something that I need to do occasionally with our kids. I tell our kids something to do, and they sort of pretend they didn't hear me, and I have to, you know, tap them on the shoulder or shut their little iPad or, you know, get their attention in some other way, because they're not listening very well. They're not heeding. They're not paying attention to what I'm telling them. Well, this is what part of obeying your parents is: listening, to heed, and to apply what they're saying. And it's the father's responsibility to ensure that his children obey. If the children fail to obey, there ought to be serious consequences. Over in Genesis 18, it talks about Abraham. God says of Abraham, I have known him in order that he may command his children and household after him, that they may keep the way of the Lord, to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he had spoken of him. So I know that he will command his children and his household to do the right thing. Fathers, of course, should not be dictators or tyrants, but they do have the right to be forceful and proactive in commanding their kids. And so I think fathers should simply tell their kids what to do. Sometimes I think fathers want to be polite. They don't want their children to hate them. So they say to their children, honey, would you go and do this? Honey, please go and do the other thing. And sometimes to a child's mind, that sounds like I can either do it or I don't have to do it. He's not telling me what to do. He's asking me what to do. And so from a child's mind, he might think, well, you didn't really tell me to do that. You just asked if I would. And so this is what I've tried to practice here recently. Instead of saying, honey, would you go do this? It might sound polite. Maybe it is polite. But now I just tell my kids, do this. And usually they do. And if you use that tone of voice, do that, you know, they, okay, I guess I better. I guess I have to. Because you don't leave them that opportunity of, well, he said please, so I guess it's really up to me if I want to do it or not. So I think it's a wise idea, and I think it's fine for parents, especially the father, to be more commanding in one's tone. And that, of course, doesn't mean you're the tyrant or the dictator. It simply means you're telling your child without any discussion or without any lack of understanding, this is what you are to do. And then it becomes more easy to figure out, if you didn't do what I told you to do, then there are going to be consequences. I didn't simply give you the option. I told you to do it. And now that you didn't do it, now there are going to be consequences. So I think you can be commanding. Don't be afraid to command your children. And generally speaking, I think if children are constantly disobedient, one of the reasons for that sometimes is that the father has allowed his children to get away with disobedience without consequences. A good example, I think, of that in the Bible is Hophni and Phinehas. Do you remember those two characters from the Old Testament. They were the sons of the priest, Eli. And it says that Eli allowed his children to do wicked things without discipline. In fact, he tried to talk to them later when they were older, when they were adults, but it didn't get through to them, and it didn't have any effect because by that time they were already set in their wickedness. And so I think part of the problem oftentimes with children is, as far as their disobedience, is that fathers in particular have let their kids get away with murder, and at a certain time in life, there's nothing you can do. The child becomes set in his ways. So the Bible instructs children to obey their fathers. Heed your father's instruction. Take his advice. That's a good way to honor your father. And I would say even after you become an adult, you can still honor your father by following his advice. I mean, if he's giving you good advice, go to your father and ask at least for his advice. That's a good way to honor your dad. Children, especially living in the home still, just do what your dad tells you to do. That's a good way to show honor to him. Thirdly, submit to your father's discipline and instruction. This is kind of a similar idea. Submit to your father's discipline and instruction. The Bible says in Ephesians 6:4, "Ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." Over in 1 Timothy 3, it talks about an elder or a pastor as one who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. And then Titus 1:6 likewise tells us that the elder is expected to have faithful children, not accused of dissipation or insubordination. So I think it's well for children to understand what their parents are trying to do. As children, do you ever think to yourself, what are my parents trying to do to me? Well, what they're trying to do to you is this text. They're trying to raise you up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. So what does this require? Well, what does it mean to bring up your children? The word literally means to raise a child to maturity. Parents are responsible to provide what a child needs to grow up to be a responsible adult. And that's not only, you know, a place to stay and food to eat and clothing and education. There goes into it far more than just providing the externals of life. So how do you raise a child up? Well, one of the things you do is provide nurture. The word here is nurture. It means discipline or training. In fact, the root word is the same as the word child. So discipline, nurture here, child training is what he's talking about. It's actually translated as chastening in Hebrews 12. Ryrie describes it as education by discipline. This suggests, at least one thing it suggests, is restraint. Little children especially need to be controlled or restrained. Those of you who have or had two-year-olds especially, or even younger than that, you know that parents need to be like a hawk watching those kids almost all the time in order to restrain them from killing themselves, basically. The kids need to be restrained. As they get older, of course, they can control themselves a little bit better. But especially while they're young, they need external constraints or restraints. And some parents, unfortunately, refuse to restrain their kids. They essentially let their kids just run all over and do anything that they want to. I hear horror stories sometimes from my wife when she takes our kids to some of these children's events. For example, over at the library from time to time, they used to, and I suppose they still will eventually, have special speakers or special demonstrations, special programs come in. McKenna's favorite is the snakes. They have the snake lady come in and demonstrate several different kinds of snakes, or they have somebody from Reggie come in with the birds of prey. And they have a special speaker there and a special presentation and about 40 or 50 people, usually mothers with their children. And unfortunately, a lot of these mothers or parents let those kids just run all over the place. Some of you maybe have sat in on some of these presentations. And the presentation is almost ruined by the fact that you have six or eight of these little kids who are running around, screaming, talking, going up front, going all over the place. And the parents just sit there and let the kids run around without restraint. Well, what happens to a child who is unrestrained throughout his life? That little brat who runs around without restraint becomes a brat of an adult. And so discipline is important. You've got to restrain that child. Discipline also includes physical punishment when necessary. Fathers sometimes need to, as they say, apply the Board of Education to the seat of knowledge, if you know what I'm talking about. Proverbs 13:24 says, "He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly." Proverbs 19:18, "Chasten your son while there is hope." So there comes a time in the life of a child where that chastening, especially physical chastening, is not going to have much of an effect. I can remember very vividly the first time that a spanking from my dad did not bother me. Some of you may remember that when you're, whatever, 12, 13, 14 years old. I remember my dad spanking me, and I just sort of said, "Go ahead. Doesn't bother me a bit." I was really a rebellious little kid, I guess. But I remember that time when it was too late. It was too late for my dad to impose physical discipline on me because I was of the age where I felt like turning around and boxing him one in the nose rather than, you know, crying about the fact that he was spanking me. So there comes a time, I think, in most lives, especially boys, where if you don't chasten him, if you don't discipline him up to that point, after that point, there's no use doing it, at least not in a physical way. You know, you can withhold the car keys or withhold the allowance or something else, but physical discipline after that is not going to be too effective. So do it while there is hope. Proverbs 23:13, "Do not withhold correction from the child, for if you beat him with a rod, he will not die." So that's a pretty strong language about using physical discipline when it's necessary. The biblical expectation is that parents will use proper physical restraint and discipline as necessary. And that is in the best interest of the child as well as the parents. Now, culture today tells us that we dare not use physical discipline, but the Bible recognizes the value of that process. We also recognize that in some cases, parents can become abusive in using physical discipline, and we're certainly not excusing that. There is no excuse for abuse. The Bible does not recommend or tolerate abuse of any kind, but it does recommend using physical discipline, and as long as it's rightly and properly and applied in a controlled way, then it can be, I think, an effective tool of discipline. So there's the discipline, there's this nurture, there's this instruction in more of a physical way. Then the other word here is admonition. Bring your children up in the nurture, the discipline, and the admonition. This word means rebuke or warning or correction. The word translated here has more of a verbal aspect than a physical connotation. To admonish means to warn or to discipline verbally. We might call it training by word. And so sometimes a stern rebuke is all that's necessary. You just talk to your child. You don't need to touch the child physically. You don't need to, use a physical means. It's more just a verbal training. Now, if the verbal correction doesn't work, then you can go on to more physical things. But obviously, the verbal should be the first thing to use as far as instruction or discipline. And notice this little phrase here at the end, of the Lord, the nurture and admonition of the Lord. So obviously that means it can't be abusive. However you're going to discipline your child, whether it's verbally or physically, it has to be of the Lord. It has to be in a way that's in keeping with what the Lord has promised or what the Lord has commanded or what the Lord has taught. So that means from a child's perspective, he or she has to obey in a way of the Lord. So if your parents command you to do something sinful, are you required to do it? Well, the Bible says we ought to obey God rather than man. So if your parents, even though your father, let's say, commands you to do something sinful, and even though he is your top authority here on this earth, still, if your parents command you to do something sinful, well, you ought to obey God rather than man. And likewise, when parents are doing discipline, they have to do it in a way of the Lord. It cannot be abusive. It has to be in a way that's in keeping with biblical teaching. The ultimate goal in all of this is spiritual transformation of the Lord. It has to be for the Lord. Fathers must be particularly careful to point their children to Christ and to salvation. And it would be a wonderful thing for you fathers if you had the opportunity to lead your children to Christ. Now, it didn't happen that way in my case. I do remember at least one time sitting at an evangelistic service when my dad asked me at the invitation if I wanted to go forward and accept Christ. And I was already a believer at that time. But I appreciated the fact that my dad inquired into my spiritual condition. Am I saved? Do I need to be saved? Is there anything I can do to help you in your journey to Christ and salvation? And so that's a good thing for fathers to inquire into. Sometimes I think fathers think that it's the mother. You know, that whole religious thing is kind of more the mother's duty. But you know, it says here, fathers, bring up your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. If you don't know the Lord, how are you going to bring up your kids in the nurture and admonition of the Lord? So it obviously assumes that you're a believer. You know the Lord yourself, and you're able to lead your children to follow the Lord also. That ought to be the top priority, frankly, for both parents, but especially the father, to lead their child to a saving knowledge of Christ, to inquire at least. Have you ever, fathers, even talked to your kids about whether they know the Lord? That might be a good thing to do. And so let me encourage you as fathers to look into and make sure that you know the spiritual condition of your kids. Remember Deuteronomy 6, it says, "These words which I command you shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in the house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up." I mean, do you talk about spiritual things in the household? Whose responsibility is it to make sure that you do? It's the father. The father has to set the spiritual tone. And if the father doesn't care about spiritual things, well, then it's the mother's responsibility. And if she doesn't care about spiritual things, well, then it becomes just the church, what they get from church, you know, 1 hour a week. So it's got to be the fathers who lead in the spiritual things of the household. And most importantly, the father ought to lead his children to salvation. Obviously, you can't force anybody into anything, but you can be a good influence. You can set the environment for your children to hear the gospel and to be saved. And that ought to be one of the most significant things for fathers, is that their children follow their faith. They follow them in serving the Lord, in being saved, and in serving Christ. And so parents, of course, they have to deal with behavior, but they really ought to be dealing with the heart matters, the central heart matters for each child. The child's behavior reflects what's going on internally in his heart and mind. And so if the behavior is rebellious, if the behavior is immoral and wicked and disrespectful, it's because their heart is not attuned with the Lord. And so that's a greater problem than just a little misbehavior. I mean, you have to deal with misbehavior, but that reflects who they are, what's going on spiritually. And so that's where fathers and mothers as well have to inquire into the heart status of the child. So children should be aware of what their parents are trying to do. They're trying to raise them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Parents use verbal and physical discipline to instruct their children and help them become godly Christian adults. If your father is trying to achieve that goal, then he is worthy of honor. Again, maybe your father fails and comes short, but if he's trying to raise you up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, he is worthy of honor. Honorable fathers are working diligently to bring their kids up to know and serve the Lord. Let's go on to another one, and that is be wise. Be wise, don't be a fool. I think that parents typically are very happy when their children turn out well. If their children meet their expectations, if the children achieve something in this world, if the children are not just a bunch of failures, well, then parents are happy. Have you ever seen those stickers, the little bumper sticker, "My child is a honor roll student"? Well, why do you suppose parents put that on their car? It's because they're very happy when their children achieve. And likewise, the Bible here says that the parents are happy when the children are wise. If your children turn out to be wise and God-fearing people, parents are happy about that. That's what it says in several verses in Proverbs. I'll just kind of read through several of these Proverbs. "A wise son makes a glad father. He who begets a scoffer does so to his sorrow, and the father of a fool has no joy. The foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to her who bore him. A foolish son is the ruin of his father. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who begets a wise child will delight in him. Whoever loves wisdom makes his father rejoice." I expect that most of us, those of us who are saved, want to be wise. We want our parents to be happy with us. We want our father and mother to rejoice that we turned out as we did. So what does biblical wisdom look like? Well, of course, the Bible says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So to be wise, you have to fear the Lord, to know the Lord. Wisdom, of course, is making good decisions. It's also getting a good education. The Bible talks about the importance of knowledge and understanding. So a wise child fears the Lord. He obeys his parents. He takes his education seriously. And if you would do that, your parents would be happy with you. You know, there's a lot of things we can do to make our parents sad or to make them unhappy with us. But if we would simply fear the Lord, obey our parents, act respectfully, do the right thing, our parents would be much more happier than otherwise. Part of wisdom also is avoiding foolishness. So the other side of the coin of wisdom is foolishness. Biblically speaking, foolishness is not being simply silly or funny. Sometimes we think of foolishness as being kind of a comedian or just telling a lot of jokes or, you know, just being a kind of a happy-go-lucky kind of a person. But biblically, foolishness is a very serious problem that we want to avoid. Proverbs mentions several categories of foolishness. So if you want your dad to be happy with you, avoid these categories of foolishness. For example, the lazy fool, a person who sits on the couch all day playing video games or watching internet for hours every day. A lazy couch potato. The gluttonous fool, one who eats his parents out of house and home. The rebellious fool, one who refuses instruction and thinks that he's always right. The scornful or the mocking fool, one who makes fun of others, especially those who are trying to do the right thing. The quick-tempered fool, one who loses his temper and can't control his emotions. The loudmouth or the chattering fool, one who talks too much and often says the wrong thing. The perverse or immoral fool, one who behaves in ungodly and immoral ways. The drunken fool, obviously one who abuses alcohol. The scheming fool, one who makes plans to hurt others. And then there's another kind of a category called the naive or the simple, someone who's easily led astray by bad people or who does not know the difference between good and evil. These are 10 different categories of foolishness that if you would avoid, your parents would be very happy with you. But if you can't avoid them, here's another verse that applies. Proverbs 22:15. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child, but what does it go on to say? The rod of correction will drive it far from him. So what are your parents trying to do? They're trying to raise you up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. But if they see foolishness there, what should they try to do? They should try to drive that foolishness out of you. And sometimes using that rod of correction is what's required to drive that foolishness out of your heart. Proverbs 10:1 again says, a wise son makes a glad father. And so if you want your father and mother to be glad about you, to be happy with you, avoid foolishness and try to be a wise person. And then finally, one last thing you can do to honor your father, and just very briefly, and that is just to be satisfied with what your dad provides. One of the main responsibilities for husbands and fathers is that they provide for their household. Now, in some cases, of course, we know that the wives also work, and they contribute greatly to the financial stability of the household. But still, generally speaking, for many, many families, it's the father who's the main provider. And really, he's the one that God has instructed to provide for the needs of the household. And so a good way to honor your dad is simply to appreciate and to be satisfied with what your dad provides. Your dad is probably doing the best he can to provide for you. And so for a child to be unthankful or ungrateful for what the father provides is a way of dishonoring your dad. You know, some dads can provide very lavishly. They have a wonderful job, a good position, a good income, and they can provide all sorts of really nice things for their family. Other families provide very modestly. The father has a job that provides everything and maybe a little bit more than what the family needs. There are some fathers, I suppose, who provide just the very basic, bare minimum. But, you know, children can be happy in any of those environments, whether their family might be in poverty or their family might be middle class or their family might be in the upper echelons of income. Children can be happy in all those environments in spite of whether they get a lot or they get a little, as long as their parents love them. That's the best thing that a father can do for his family, is to love them and to provide as best as he can. And if your father is there for you, if he's providing for you, if he shows his love and concern for you, then you should be glad. you should be very happy, because there are many, many families who are broken, who don't have a father in the household, who have no father figure showing love or concern or providing an example at all. And these days it's much more common where families are broken up or fathers do not stay, you know, long term with the families that they have been a part of. And so if you have a father who's trying to provide for you, who's giving you what you need to live, who's providing a roof and all the things that you need, well, you should be glad, you should be grateful, and you should honor him for that. So be satisfied with what he provides. Father's Day is a yearly reminder that we need to honor our dads. We want to do that, especially on Father's Day, but we should be interested in doing that every day. If your dad is a Christian, the best thing that you can do is follow him in his faith. That is, be saved and serve Christ like your dad does, assuming that your dad is a believer and is serving Christ. That should be the highest desire for every Christian dad, is to see their kids saved and serving God. Your dad would be happier about that than anything else that you can do. If your dad is a solid Christian believer, for you to be saved as his child would be the best thing that you could do for him. One of the best ways to honor your dad is to follow him in the faith if he is saved. Beyond that, as we've talked about, you can honor your dad by respecting him, by obeying him, by learning from him, growing in wisdom, avoiding foolishness, and trying to be satisfied with what he provides. No dad is perfect, but we can honor our dad for all the good and godly and biblical things that they do. Well, let's close in prayer.